Welcome to the MacGuffin. I'm Alex, and with me, as per usual, is James. Before we get started, you can check out our website, themacguffin.com. We've most recently talked about good movies like Anomalisa, Cloverfield and 10 Cloverfield Lane, and The Third Man. So if you want to listen to a podcast about a good movie, that's where you can find those. I also wrote a couple things most recently about Terrence Malick and his work, specifically Night of Cups. But yeah, the website, themacguffin.com. Also follow us on Twitter, at The MacGuffin, and I think that's about it.
Welcome to The MacGuffin Man. And now, here are Alex and James.
James.
Yeah.
Let's just get this out of the way right at the beginning. What is your mother's name? Just so like we don't get like two-thirds of the way through this podcast and then have to abruptly change course.
Then tack a hot hour on to the end of it. Yeah. A quick question actually before we get started. You said that if they want to listen to a podcast about good movies, they should listen to the movies you listed.
Yes.
What you say that like this isn't a good movie.
I mean, maybe I can't pass judgment on it because I missed about 40% of it while I was rolling my fucking eyes. But no, this Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, which is the film that we are talking about today.
Batman v Superman.
Yeah. is not good. It's not a good movie. I enjoyed the process of watching it, especially the first hour. Like, I had a ball for the first half of this movie. Because yeah. I also saw this movie exactly how I think you should see this movie, which is after having watched 3.5 other good movies and then bringing a bottle of whiskey into this movie. That's like that was the state I was in, and that was the best way to watch this movie. And I really enjoyed it for the first half for sure.
And this time you're not being a contrarian because the reviews of this movie are pretty similar to what you've been saying. Yeah. Not that everyone should go see it drunk, but just...
No, everybody should see this. If you're seeing this movie, the Doomsday stuff's a lot easier if you're drunk.
Yeah, I mean, this was just a very big movie as far as budget and, you know, two of kind of the most iconic characters in pop culture, really. Yeah. I mean... I was going to say comic books, but that would, I think, even be an understatement. And they've had movies recently of, I mean, these two characters have been in movies recently with varying degrees of success, seems to be the consensus. And now they're together, and this is, you know, Warner Brothers' attempt to really kickstart their expanded cinematic universe to mimic the success Marvel's found, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I mean, when you say kickstart, that's a good way of putting it because they really rush into it, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. Like they just throw everything in this movie, basically, as opposed to the Marvel way where there was a lot of setup, you know?
Right. But I think that they, as I said, they're trying to match success. I think Marvel's success came about more accidentally, which is to say they wanted to make good movies and make money, but it started with Iron Man as, you know, kind of the standalone movie. And Marvel kind of showed you can make this whole universe similar to the way that comic books function, where characters come and go in each other's pictures and, you know, tie into the other publications and things like that. Marvel kind of fell into that, whereas this seems to be more of a deliberate attempt to replicate Marvel's success.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
Which also explains why they rushed into it.
Yeah. No. I'm not.
Studio has not known for patience.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, as I said, this is not making the money they wanted it to make, not getting the reviews they wanted it to get. And it seems there's kind of rumbles that this is causing Warner Brothers to rethink their approach to these movies. Mm-hmm. So I guess we kind of got your general opinion of your feeling on this movie. Yeah. Do you want to go into any more detail?
Well, I mean, the movie feels like a body without joints, you know, like like you have your legs and you have your arms, but you don't have your elbows and your knees, you know, like there's, it seems like there's nothing connecting that helps it to move like it should, you know, everything seems disjointed, even in the first half, which is the part that I enjoyed. And I will say I enjoyed it because it was bonkers. Like it was just so weird. It felt like I liked it like I liked Twilight, you know, like which is a movie I really loved watching the first time I saw it, and is a movie that is similarly insane. And I was just laughing through it. And then the second half, they kind of try, and this happened with Twilight as well, and tends to happen in a lot of these movies that are accidentally funny and, you know, in ways that they didn't want them to be, is that they have to have some sort of plot in the end, or they feel compelled to. And then that sort of the movie gets bogged down because all of the fun, crazy stuff that they were doing the first half can't exist when you're actually trying to have a story as well. You know?
Right. So, but do you think that the problem with the first half is them doing all these fun things, and then you said it gets bogged down by plot. I felt that often with a kind of a big movie like this, it's tough to set things up and things, you know, you have a lot to do and it feels so disjointed. I will say though, at the start of this movie, probably with a few exceptions, but there's a good first 10-12 scenes where a scene begins, ends, and a new one starts up, and yeah, it just totally has that feeling of being so disjointed, and you're not sure really what got established in that, and you know what's going to happen here, and I felt at least at the beginning kind of has this narrative through line where you feel like you're watching a story. It's little parts, and I mean that's that's the beginning of a lot of movies, is you know, kind of a feeling of setting up all these pins so that we can knock them down at the end. And in a movie like this, where even in the title, we know what we're building towards is this fight between these two characters. You know, we kind of have to lay this groundwork. I'm trying to, you know, play devil's advocate here.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Not just rip on it. But I mean, I think that's something that a lot of movies have to do, but I felt kind of the same way that this one was just, it was so disjointed and just really plods along for that first for the beginning.
Yeah. And I mean, to further accentuate your point, and it kind of felt like loosely connected sketches that exist in the same universe sort of thing.
Yeah.
But there are just straight up cuts to black at the ends of scenes, and then they come back on the new scene. Like they just didn't know how to connect the two. So they're just like, I don't know, a couple frames of black.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just, yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with what you're saying. And as far as like setting up the pins to knock them down sort of thing, I saw, and I'll keep this brief because I assume few people have seen it. I saw a Midnight Special yesterday, and that movie is great and is really good, and it does a really good job of setting up pins to knock them down in a way that is actually cohesive and interesting. And you don't quite know what's happening, but like, you know, that the ideas are connected. And that did not always seem to really shine through in Batman versus Superman.
Right. And I think that you kind of pay more, you know, visual attention to things like a fade out versus a freeze frame versus cutting to black at the end of the scene. Just because you're more visually minded when watching a movie like that. And I do think, kind of as you said, a cut to black where we just have a couple seconds of nothing is such a perfect visual representation of two separate ideas and not having a segue in between. You know, you don't need, I can't think of a more universal example, like a Mr. Show bit where, you know, the character turns on the TV in one scene and then the next scene is on that TV or something like that. You don't need that level, but I just felt that they were so disjointed and that the way the plot moved along just was so ham-fisted and clunky like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's more in the first half of the film than the second, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when they get to the second half, like, I mean, the characters are all pretty much together, so they don't really have as many things to connect, right? So they have fewer chances to screw it up.
Great. I'll say that an area of this movie that I did like more than the others is some of the Batman stuff, some of the Superman stuff, which surprises me. I was just not just much lesser fan of Superman than Batman. The characters, TV shows, movies up till this point. But I did like some of the kind of legal, moral, philosophical kind of questioning about how to deal with Superman. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that that is the interesting part about him. You know, if you want to do him interestingly, because he has so few or no flaws, it's kind of about mankind's relationship with them is the only place to really find a way in that's kind of dynamic and interesting.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think another Zack Snyder movie, The Watchmen, I think some of the strongest stuff in that movie is, well, first the intro, but the Dr. Manhattan stuff. And he's, you know, such a Superman-like character. And in that, and more so the graphic novel, that's handled in an interesting way. Did you find that, you know, any part of that rings true for you in Batman versus Superman?
I mean, the idea is there. I don't think nothing about the execution of it really struck me as particularly interesting. It kind of just reminded me of, because the Marvel movies do things like this as well, where it just sort of felt like maybe, I don't know, they just felt like they should tie it into to the way that, you know, the law and everything actually, or in America actually works. And it just sort of felt more like an obligation. I feel like the idea was about as far as they really got into it. There weren't like conversations about it that I can recall that I found particularly interesting. The idea, of course, is very interesting. And I think you're right in that if Superman did exist, this would be something that would have to be dealt with. It's like, oh, there's just a god now. There's a god living among us. And then we'd all have to listen to Joan Osborne songs and take them and figure out what we have to do with it. I don't know. In this particular example, I don't think it worked. You know?
Yeah. 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 And it's another cheap thing that I enjoy, but I do love when, you know, Neil deGrasse Tyson or Soledad O'Brien or someone plays themselves. It adds so much to me, it's so cheap. I mean, it's not necessarily cheap. I mean, it doesn't take a genius to do it, but it adds something for me, I have to admit.
I am starting to be on the opposite side of that just because I think people use it so much as a crutch now.
Yeah.
There's a good example in this movie as well, but when Anderson Cooper says that downtown is clear, it's like, okay, great. You heard some of the concerns about the last movie. We get it. And like House of Cards this season has been like relying on media people playing themselves. Like there's a big moment early in the season where an event happens, and then the next 3 minutes is just media reports about it. It's the laziest thing in the world. And I think that in general, media products are starting to just do it too much because it's too easy, you know, because of course these people would want to be in these movies. Of course, Soledad O'Brien wants to be in this movie, you know, it's such a big deal. So why wouldn't she, you know? But it's just like, I don't know. It doesn't add anything to me.
Yeah.
Are we supposed to think, like, has CNN moved from Atlanta to Metropolis or Gotham or wherever they are?
Yeah. With Anderson Cooper's cameo is the workday is over, so no one's downtown.
Yeah, I think it's so
kind
so
of paraphrasing
insane.
What he said. Yeah. I mean, it could be it's during the day, so there's no it makes so little sense no matter which way you cut
it's
it.
It's during the day, so everybody's inside and hard at work.
You know? Yeah, I know.
No, it's insane. Like 5 o'clock comes and downtown of a like of a metropolis is now empty. You know?
Yeah, that was pretty goofy. Yeah, and just that idea of the body count from the last movie being addressed, I thought was kind of a funny thing on a checklist somewhere.
Yeah, I did like the way they incorporated it at the beginning as far as Bruce Wayne's introduction. I thought that was cool that they sort of tied that into it. I still don't. Was he calling that guy dad? I don't.
Which part?
Remember in the 9/11 scene at the beginning? Where Bruce is saving people from when the towers are falling or the Wayne Tower is falling.
Yeah.
He's talking to somebody on a cell phone who is in the building.
Oh, yeah.
Does he keep calling him dad?
That's kind of where I landed on that.
Because I don't get that. I don't understand, like, was that his adopted father or something?
No, I think that's, like, his dad died when he was young. I might totally have that wrong because it seemed weird to me too.
So is that like, is the person he's talking to on a phone is a person though?
Yeah, he could be like, it could be the guy's last name is Dodd or something.
Yeah.
Because if it was him like kind of reliving the moment where his dad died, I don't think they did it clearly enough, which is weird to say about this movie. Yeah, no, that was one. I'm going to just pass on that.
Yeah, okay, that's fine.
I don't think I got it. Yeah. What did you enjoy that scene overall? Him running into the falling tower, and
there's something about the shape of Ben Affleck's body in this movie is funny to me. So him running definitely was funny to me. Yeah, it's funny actually. I watched The Town on the weekend, and he's so much smaller in The Town, and I remember thinking he looked huge when I saw The Town. Yeah, I don't know. I just enjoyed the way that they actually tied in the climax of the previous movie, and something that specifically I complained about because I thought it was insane, and that they actually kind
How
of
many
addressed
people died?
It. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. No, I thought that was good too.
Yeah, not necessarily the killing of General Zod that I didn't really care that much about either way, whether or not Superman kills somebody, but it's just the total
collateral damage.
Yeah, exactly. Lack of peripheral vision, basically.
yeah. That's, as I say, it's on a check. I think it's, you know, a reaction to it, and just some of the things they must have heard about what people didn't like so much about Man of Steel, or what kind of got overlooked.
Yeah. And on that note, is Superman a full-on idiot? Because I feel like when he comes, you know, he's got his introduction where he saves Lois, and then he comes home and she's having a bath and they have this conversation, and his explanation, he basically describes like what happened in Man of Steel, the climax of Man of Steel, which is kind of like a 9/11 sort of situation, but caused by Superman instead of a plane. He basically describes it as like a whoopsie, you know, and he killed those people when he was saving Lois Lane because the woman he loved was there and people were going to die, you know, and the way he justifies these things to himself was so it seems so haphazard. Like his logic seemed so faulty.
And yeah.
It was just really odd to me.
I don't know if super intelligence is part of it. no, but I agree. And I think there would be an interesting way to do that. You know, a character who does a lot of good, but, you know, puts his own things above, you know, kind of the numbers. But I agree with you. I think just the way he talked about it was so silly. And, you know, just if he thought about things a little bit more, a lot of these people didn't need to die.
Yeah.
And he seems to, and on a few occasions throughout this movie, not just that scene. And it doesn't register to him that that's an option. And yeah, no, I felt the same way about that.
Okay. That was another one of my favorite scenes in the movie, specifically because of it. It was just so funny to me.
He's very confused.
And Henry Cavill's glasses are just so, like, so improperly fitting for his face.
Well, you know, he's not surrounded by the brightest people. And I mean, I think one of those just inherent problems in the Superman character is the secret identity thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so outdated and goofy now. And as the movie's ending and it's you know, the sad emotional funeral stuff, and they show Superman dead on the front page and Clark Kent also dead on page 5. Yeah. And it's so close. And it's while
Clark,
it's trying.
Clark Kent also dead, comma, probably not related incident.
Well, it's just, that's one of the big problems about Superman still. I mean, it's still so wrapped up in this stilted 30s mentality, and the character just doesn't make sense in this day and age. And I think they've handled it a lot better with Captain America. You know, they do address how anachronistic he is, but I think it's interesting and funny at times. Whereas with Superman, you know, they're laying it on so thick there, and that's supposed to be the heaviest part. And it's just so fucking silly when they show that thing in the newspaper. It just points out what a, like, how outdated this character is, and how what?
Yeah, that he is reading a newspaper. You're right. Well,
hey, Lawrence Fishburne addressed that. He had some funny stuff, actually.
Oh, I've got some questions about Lawrence Fishburne.
Okay, but it's, you know, just as I said, Superman was just pretty far down on my list, and as time passes, it just he's just more and more of a relic, and to do it at that point too, which I know it's when you have to do it, but it just completely underlined how easily you can mishandle this character and how easily they have mishandled it.
Yeah.
Lawrence Fishburne questions? Oh.
Does Perry White actually say, also just in general, Perry White seems to be obsessed with getting Clark Kent to cover football, which seemed weird to me. But I think at one point he actually yells, "Get the football," at Clark Kent. And I found that really funny. And I also found it funny that the football team, you could just see them playing in the background of one of the TV screens in the, I think it's in the newsroom, but they're just called Metropolis State. I thought that was a really, like, really funny, like, lazy thing that they did. It's just like, I don't know, just call it Metropolis State, you know, like other schools do this, we'll just do that, it's easy enough, moving on. Yes. And is Metropolis a state, you know?
I was under the impression it was a city, but
yeah, no, exactly, but I know, but is it like New York, New York sort of thing?
Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
Yeah. Anyway, that was it. I got a chuckle out of it being Metropolis State. I thought
okay.
that was indicative of how lazy a lot of this movie is.
Yeah. Anything you liked?
Jesse Eisenberg was in this movie.
Yeah, it's, I wanted to see if you're going to be able to say anything negative about your boy.
He can't hit a jump shot.
Oh, man. Steph Curry over here.
Yeah. No, no, there's... I was listening to an interview with one of the producers of White Men Can't Jump, and there was a rule on that set that there was no cutting from the person taking the shot to the ball going in the hoop. Like, that was like a rule. And so that was very fresh in my mind when I saw Batman versus Superman, because it might have even been the same day. And I see Jesse Eisenberg with a basketball release cut to the close up of the basket. and I just thought that was really funny. But Jesse Eisenberg seems to know what movie he's in, which I liked.
Yeah, I was pretty sure that was going to be your understanding of his performance.
And just in general, like, he was fun and bonkers, which is also describes the better parts of this movie, you know? So,
yeah,
I enjoyed him. Just the way he talks and everything about him is just kind of funny to me.
Yeah. It's even in this, it's still fun watching him work.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. And him saying the metahuman thesis made me laugh. He's like, "Oh yes, the metahuman thesis." it's great. Because you know exactly, like, every time he's in one of these movies, whether it's Now You See Me or especially this one, you know exactly what Jesse Eisenberg thinks about this movie, because he's never really hidden his opinions for anybody on these types of things. And I don't know, it adds an extra element of fun knowing how much Jesse Eisenberg probably hates this movie, you
know? But loves the paycheck.
Yeah exactly. Yeah.
How about Ben Affleck as Bruce Wayne?
I thought it was fine. You know? I don't know. I didn't see anything that was like great or anything that was terrible, you know?
Okay.
Which I think in this movie is a success.
Which makes it a high point of the movie for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess Wonder Woman as well, Diana Pryce.
She's yeah,
a pretty small part, but she's in it. I enjoyed when they show the photo of her from 1916 or whatever. It made me think of remember, like, this might have been a couple of years ago, but like when pictures started circulating online of like vampire Nicolas Cage and vampire Jay-Z and vampire John Travolta, that picture looked like another one of those, and it made me laugh so hard. I thought it was so great.
Oh, I had not thought of that.
That's the I thought of it immediately and started laughing.
What a great time for the internet, that was.
I know, exactly. It's all been downhill since then. It's all been social media and comment sections.
Should have shut it down at a time point.
Exactly.
We don't need to be here.
Yeah. Nicolas Cage is a vampire. We've solved the only mystery that needs solving. Okay, so I have a few random questions I think we can go through.
Sure. Speed around?
Yeah, we've gone through a couple, but the first one, and this is, I guess this is a bad question for a speed round, but what is Lois doing in this movie? Like, what is, why? Like, I know she has to be here for Superman to have somebody to care about, but like, if you remove her from the movie, like, it makes everything better for everybody, right?
Yeah, well, she's trying to get more legroom.
Okay.
That's her first priority. Yep.
She's like 5'2". She doesn't need the legroom.
Amy Adams. Let's see. She is investigating that bullet.
Okay. What was the bullet again?
That shootout she was at the desert at the beginning.
Yes. Okay, because she's trying to figure out what caused the shootout. Right?
And the funding for them and where they got the bullets and it LexCorp. She's just a big MacGuffin machine. Like, she's what Superman needs to rescue. And I don't even remember the other people dying in that desert scene.
I think it's just sort of like the general Superman reverberation that kills them. You know, like he busts through a wall and presumably that wall flies out and hits people. You know?
Oh, well, he shouldn't do that.
No, exactly. Of course he shouldn't do that. That's why I said, is Superman a full-on idiot?
Yeah, no, I know. he should think about that kind of stuff.
No, exactly. Just be slightly more graceful and five fewer people will die every time you go somewhere. Like, it's so stupid. And Lois seems smart and certainly has his ear and should be able to explain this to him. Yeah.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I will fully agree with that.
Are you excited for Batman v Superman v Mad Max?
I'm excited for a third of that.
Okay.
Last hour.
That was one of my favorite parts in the movie, was the long take apocalyptic Batman nightmare sequence.
The Dark Nightmare?
Yeah, exactly. I thought that was amazing.
Oh, and you actually liked it?
Oh, I loved it. It was crazy. It's
Why do you like that?
It's in the movie.
Above everything else. Oh, that it's in it?
Yeah, exactly. It was just another one of those things that, like, I couldn't believe it happened, and it doesn't really make sense that it does happen or that it is in the movie. But it was well executed, and I thought it looked cool. And it was also funny to me that it existed, you know? So it was just so weird.
Yeah, I thought it looked really cool, and it was a nice kind of departure. I know we had that desert scene, but so much of this movie is dark and trying to be dark. I thought that was cool, just kind of scorched earth action sequence with Batman having a gun and just kicking the shit out of people.
Do you think Scoot McNairy is going to send his residual checks to Zack Snyder with messages scrawled and read on them?
I hope so.
I love that. I forget, there were a couple of the things that were scrawled on those things that were actually pretty funny.
Yeah.
Like, in the unintentional way that I've been in this movie.
I like to believe that the reason I like the kind of superhero or the Superman political meaning stuff is not just because Scoot McNairy's there, but I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not.
Well, Scoot and Holly Hunter together. Dream team.
I was amazed by what a threat he apparently posed to the police officer who's supposed to defend Superman's statue. Get down from there. We need backup. And it's like, and it's on the news. Like, this seems like a pretty big, a pretty easy problem to solve.
Oh, that's great.
I mean, not to be insensitive, but he didn't have legs and he wasn't very high up on the statue by the time the guy noticed.
Yeah.
He throws like an empty cup. And then the cop feels like this is just way too much for him to handle.
This is a riot waiting to happen.
Yeah. Oh, gaining no support from anybody around him either. Like, there's no sign that this is the thing that's going to turn the tide on the public opinion.
I totally forgot about that. That was insane.
Love me some Scoot, though.
Who doesn't? Why was Holly Hunter, why did she have a mason jar? Is that like a thing that people drink out of now? Like in courts and whatnot?
Oh, no.
It just seemed weird to me.
Lex Luthor put it there.
Yeah, no, I thought, okay. I didn't know if he just put the liquid there or what, but.
No, I think that was a whole setup.
Okay.
He peed in a cup and wrote Granny's Peach Tea on it.
Gotcha.
And she's from Kentucky. She grew up on a farm.
Okay.
I thought it was funny when she was walking around with her jacket over her shoulders and not on.
Okay, I don't remember that either. But
yeah. It's pretty small. I only noticed it pretty late. But
yeah. Yeah. Why did... Okay, so when Batman decides to not kill Superman,
Yeah.
It's just because their moms have the same name, right? Like, that's it?
Well, I guess that's what triggers his understanding that Superman is a man and not just an evil god. And
okay.
It brings up some memories of parents and children. I mean, as a plot point, I could not believe that that's what they went with.
Oh, it's insane. Yeah.
Just because this the whole crux of this movie is them fighting. And you know they're going to get on the same side somehow. Just to set up Justice League, and we know one of them isn't really going to die, except he doesn't. but yeah, I really couldn't believe that that's where that pivot was. I got several texts from different people right as they left the theater, because they knew it. I had seen it pretty early, that like just about that, just yeah. Or just the word Martha, or I mean, it's so silly.
It's so silly.
I mean, I like Jesse Eisenberg saying Martha, Martha, Martha.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I mean, as a plot point of his mother getting kidnapped, it's all fine and good, but it's just that realization, being such a central part of this movie. I mean, literally, the title is Batman versus Superman, and this changes all that.
Yeah.
I thought it was just so bad. And then you think about them in the writer's room and how jacked up they got when they figured out that was going to be what they're going to do. And
yeah.
It just upsets you even more.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good time. Was that you said before I had seen it that there was a moment in this movie where you were like looking around, wondering if other people were, that was it?
Yep.
Okay. I wasn't looking around because I was I knew there was literally one other person in the movie theater I was in, so I figured he and I were on the same page. But I just laughed very hard.
Yeah, I remember you saying that you saw it in a pretty empty theater, and it's just the fact that you went not opening week, and this movie dropped off so hard from weekend one to two.
Yeah, I mean, it was also Thursday night at 10:30 p.m. was the beginning of the show, and it's a 2.5-hour movie, so I was surprised they were showing it that late. You know. I found it funny that Jimmy Olsen was shooting on film. Like, that seems to be the easiest giveaway that I am hiding something somewhere. I'm shooting on an outdated format that makes no sense to shoot on, especially for newspapers.
Do they still need to blink and make noises?
What?
Like these tracking devices.
Oh yeah, I know. No, they don't. They could just they could make a camera, like a fully functioning camera that is also just a tracking device, you know? Like, yes. It's like the Find My iPhone thing, you know? Like, this camera can just have a thing in it that knows where you are. It's not hard.
And it's this movie's supposed to be contemporary. I mean, I'm glad it wasn't the beeping that gave it away or something. Like, it's clearly just that big and flashing and making a noise as a visual cue to tell the viewer, hey, these are the tracking devices you've been used to for the last 30 years in film and television. Like, it's just a quick visual thing. But yeah, it's so fucking dumb too. It's so easy to do that another way. But anyway,
last speed round question. Do you think Kevin Costner has any leftover hero pie that we can have? That was another one of the highlights of this movie.
I couldn't even look around at that point. I just hung my head in disappointment when he showed.
I loved it so much. It was the best. Like, the fact that he shows up in the winter tundra, that alone was great. And then the story he's telling was funny. And then when he says hero pie, it's just the goddamn cherry. It was beautiful.
Is it hero pie or hero cake?
I don't know.
I think it's cake.
Is it cake? Either one.
Doesn't make it any better.
If hero, any sort of pastry, you know? It could be hero Danish, whatever. It doesn't matter. Like, it just...
Once you eat it while the horses are drowning at the Langford time, and Kentucky wheat, man.
Swing votes and hero cakes.
Draft day, man.
I am the NFL, man. Yeah, that was absolutely wonderful.
That might be the third draft day reference I've managed to sneak into a podcast.
Congrats to you. One other thing. Did you notice that when they show a part that's pretty clearly supposed to be Superman saving people at Katrina, he's only helping white people, like there are no black people present, which I thought was very tone deaf to the Hurricane Katrina situation in general.
Extremely tone deaf.
Yeah.
And the part where they put in Kanye West saying Superman hates black people.
Yeah. Oh, that was... I mean, I can't believe he called him out like that. He's still, and that's still polo phase Kanye too. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I have anything else.
I mean, maybe it's just slow motion, but I thought the gunshot breaking the pearl necklace at the beginning, mm-hmm. and the cannons firing in slow mo at the funerals were at least nice visual things. I mean, Zack Snyder can do some nice visual things once in a while, but
yeah.
Just to give him a whole movie, and I think this is where Warner Brothers is currently at, seems like a bad idea. And to give him these very, very valuable properties, I mean, this just might be the closing down of Zack Snyder's, we'll say, glory days. Is this what kind of the end of the superhero boom looks like a little bit, or is this just a blip?
I think eventually it turns out to be a blip just because the machine is too far in motion, right? Because, like, the thing I sort of think about is we've talked about this a lot, is the 80s action hero, right? The Stallone, Schwarzenegger, Van Damme to an extent type of person that kind of rose to prominence in the 80s and then over the course of the 90s, basically in a post-Die Hard world, started to fall away a little bit. And I think that there's an element of that to Batman versus Superman, the beginning of falling away. And it helps that we are now in a world where we're like post Deadpool, where there's post somebody being in one of these movies and also making fun of them consistently, right. Which is the John McClane thing. But I think that there are just too many things that are already in motion for it to be more than a blip. Like, there might be a couple more failures, but I think all in all, the machine's too big to fail.
But it can't last forever.
No, it can't last forever, and it won't. But I don't think it's over. You know, I don't think now is the end.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, contracts have been signed and things have been shot and schedules have been made. Not that those are entirely set in stone, as we mm-hmm. have kind of seen. But it's already kind of being said that Warner Brothers might be kind of thinking about releasing fewer things. I mean, they've just been on such a bad run lately. I mean, Jupiter Ascending and Pan and In the Heart of the Sea, I read those names today and I can't, like, those things are just so gone from my mind. Yeah. And there's so much money in those.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree. It's not one bad movie's going to end it. And
because there have been many bad movies that the superheroes made already. You know, like this
losing a lot of money on a big one.
Yeah.
I agree that the effects couldn't really be felt in a meaningful way for, I'll say, 3 years mm-hmm. to really kind of start a wind down. And certainly not one big bomb, one big performance like this. You know, after having seen what these movies can do, one of them's not going to change everybody's mind, but I would think this makes a dent in the way they're at least thought about.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like there's so much evidence in Hollywood's history that people will keep riding the same horse until it's already been a corpse for a year and a half, you know, like, and also the fact that the sort of studio heads themselves have changed. There's been change over in how they think, specifically because a lot of them now have never I have less of a producerial background than a lot of studio heads in the past. Like, it used to be pretty traditional that to get to the head of a studio, you would have had to produce a movie. And now one of the studios is headed up by somebody that literally began their career in working for Six Flags and has never produced a movie. And it's basically Mark Harris wrote this really good thing about it a couple years ago on Grantland. And he's he talks about basically how the studios are closer to just basic manufacturers than they are filmmakers at this point, just because of the mentality that the people at the tops of them have. It's just like, oh, the Lego movie was a success. Let's make a ninja Lego, Batman Lego, another Lego movie, all these things, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and from a studio perspective, it was interesting. I was reading about Warner Brothers and that traditionally they've been more of a filmmaker and star-driven studio. Mm-hmm. You know, they have kind of their family of directors, as they call it, and kind of a few big stars that they like a lot. I mean, this isn't this studio system of early Hollywood where you are kind of owned in a stable by a studio, but mm-hmm. it's kind of been the way that they've been functioning. And I just found it interesting that that's largely not the way that this whole boom is going. Yeah. I mean, it's not about a filmmaker first or a star first. It's about the property. And it just doesn't seem that surprising that this is something that they're struggling with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just interesting because with comic books, that I think that is one of the things that people like about them is that you know, the heroes pop in and out and you can kind of connect these worlds. And now that means spending a bunch of time in the movie kind of world building and pointing out how these worlds connect and how this story affects that story. And that just takes up running time. And to have even just a short cameo from someone means paying a star a lot of money to have them show up. And these huge budgets mean you have to make these big, massive, you know, expensive movies that are a long time in the making and, you know, really visually effects heavy. And it just strikes me that the comic book medium was so cheap and you could kind of churn them out and make these a lot more cheaply. And now to do it in Hollywood just costs so much money. And it just seems kind of antithetical to the source material.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, these movies could be made well with less money. I think superhero movies in general could deal with taking away some things more than adding things in, just because I find that the movies in general are too big. And
And maybe Deadpool will help that.
Yeah, I mean, I can't comment on it. I didn't see it, so I don't know what it's like, really.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think in general, like the way that these things keep going, just because of the businessman mindset is to continue you know, if you made this much money on Man of Steel, you need to make this much more on Batman versus Superman, so you have to make it bigger so it appeals to more people. And I just think at some point there is a ceiling on that, and Marvel is going to hit a ceiling on that at some point too. I don't think it's going to be until the Infinity War, but it will happen, you know, like and it's just because this mindset that things have to keep getting bigger when they don't. Like, sometimes things are okay to just be gigantic and they don't have to be uber gigantic, you know?
Yeah. Well, and when they get to Infinity War, it'll be a good term built right into the title of kind of the endless nature of this. If you really want to go for it forever, you can, but maybe there's good movies to be made elsewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so thanks for listening to the MacGuffin Man. Be sure to check back next week when we'll be talking about something. All right.
Thanks for listening to the MacGuffin Man. Be sure to check out themacguffinmen.com for supplementary links, articles, and more. Thanks for listening.